replenish, reimagine, recapture, rise.
Good morning. How y'all doing? All is well? All is well. All is well. So I've been a psychologist for 26 years, and I've been in ministry for 7. And one of the things that led me into the ministry was always being in the back, having questions and talking to people in my office about the sermon. And people will often say, I know what the sermon said, but I want to know how to apply it. I know I'm supposed to maintain this marriage. I don't think the pastor knows what my wife or my husband said. I don't think they know how our family is set up. I have some questions about how to apply this. Am I in the right place? You're in the right place, all right? But also, how many of you are called, whether it's official or unofficial, to work with married couples? All right, whether it's your cousin, whether it's your children. Come on, let's be honest, right? And so one of the assignments that God has given me, all right, is not only to talk about relationships, but to teach you how to heal relationships. Because what we know is that there are some people who are never going to go to the psychologist, or they cannot get access to the psychologist. They may not trust the psychologist, or they may trust the psychologist, but the copay and then come on now. Has anyone been there? Come on now. It's not as easy as it sounds. You call the number, and at the end of the moment, you're on the phone with the insurance company. So what do you cover, right? $5,000 deductible anyway. So today we're going to talk about, and I want this to be interactive. I'm going to repeat your questions. I want this to be interactive when it comes to not only healing marriages, but how you minister to marriages from faith, but also what works when it comes to restoring marriages at all points. Is that okay?
Amen.
All right. So this is my wife, and I've been doing this speaking for so long. People, I just put her up there because it's like, where's your wife? All right, like you up here talking about this. I need to see evidence that you're not just doing this from the office. Do you fully get this? Are you going through what we are going through? So that is my wife. All right, that's my wife, Mecca Sierra Summer Moore from Inglewood, California. So I am in it. I am in it. All right. So I've been a psychologist for 26 years and called into the ministry. That's our family. So I'm really in it. I'm really in it. I have an older daughter who's at Howard, and youngest daughter is 8, and the son is 2. And that's what happens when you work from home during COVID. All right, I love him. I have to be honest. Like, yeah, my wife knew it. She was, why don't you work from home? I'm like, that's sure, right? And then, you know, it comes Christian on the scene. And I'm proud about it. And we have a marriage retreat my wife and I do together when it comes to building up marriages. And I'm sorry, it's called A Weekend for Love. A Weekend for Love. All right, it's happening next month. In Mexico, that's right. We need to get away, you know. All right, so there are scary statistics. Scary statistics. Did you know that we have a 50% divorce rate even inside of the church? All right, so this is why this is personal to me. How is it that we have a 50% divorce rate even amongst believers that's the same as the world? How can that be? And this is what really ignited me as a psychologist to get into the ministry. Because as psychologists, we have studied this, and how do we apply the actual counseling and the science to all be under the creator of science? Can church say amen? How do we align with our faith and still make our marriages work? What is the practical application? And I remind people that Jesus traveled with Luke. There was a doctor on the scene. And many of you may not know, but most psychologists, especially of color, are faith-based. It just may not be advertised. But because of where we are, you actually find psychologists feel like they have permission to now talk about their faith more than ever. All right? So what's interesting is when it comes to marriage, can I be honest? Can I be real? And I don't know yet. We'll go back. When it comes to marriage, and I'll try to stand back. I don't have a clicker. But what they found is that men have not been adequately educated when it comes to how to make marriage work. Y'all said I could be honest, right?
Yep.
All right. Men, by show of hands, how many of you had fathers, grandfathers, uncles, pastors sit down with you and give you an instruction manual to how to make modern day marriage work. How many of you got that? Let me put my hand down. All right. I used to look at my dad and I say, Dad, say something. My mama is just say something. All right. And then I got married and I see why he wouldn't say anything. It's not going to work anyway. I'm sorry. I'm going to be biased. Not going to win anyway. You're not going to win. So I saw he was winking at me. So I was wiser than what you thought. All right. And so what that says is that we have to do more education when it comes to helping men to navigate relationships. It's so bad now that starting in 2 years, how many of y'all are aware that due to the studies around cell phones, that most schools, many this year, but definitely by next year, cell phones won't be allowed in schools. Amen. All right. Because of the damage that it's doing to social relationships. But here's what's interesting. What they found is that since COVID, there's a big divide between boys and girls and even being able to have a conversation. So what you find is that if your kids go, you know, to middle school and high school, that girls are primarily going to junior dances and junior proms with other girls versus boys, all right? Because the boys simply just don't know how to converse, don't know how to have a conversation outside of TikTok, Instagram, just don't know. They're being called boring, right? How do you have a 20-minute conversation with someone when they've never had a 20-minute conversation? All right, so we grew up having to do that, right? And so what they found is the divide is so big that they're going to start teaching, starting in sixth grade, relationship management to boys as a mandatory class. Amen. Wow. All right? And so that is what's affecting the marriage rates, and they're actually seeing it on college, where you're seeing ratios of boys to girls being uneven just because of the educational system, but also boys who are afraid to approach relationships but wanting to be in them but not having the skills. Isn't that interesting? All right. And so when we start thinking about relationships, I start thinking about Nehemiah. All right. And so the question is, in our relationships, so if you're managing relationships, are you tearing down or are you building up your own relationship? All right. Because I talk to men every single day. And you know what some men say to me? All right. Can I?
Tell us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for permission. All right. Tell me your name.
Jonathan
gave me permission to say this, all right, so blame Jonathan, all right? So when I'm going at it, all right, I'm talking to men, all right, and they say, you know what the problem is, Doc? Women just not like they used to be. And not like they used to be. They used to stay, all right? The problems I'm having, my mama and my grandma, my great-grandma stayed, but they just don't stay anymore. Something, to talk to the women, don't talk to us. And I said, all right. You do realize, like, come on, I'm not trying to have a divide here. Get back close together, right? But what I told him is that, you know, in 1974, a wife had to get her husband's permission to get a bank loan.
Yeah.
All right? And when we looked at the research, it wasn't that mom and grandma were happy. It was the fact that they felt like they had to stay for economic reasons. All right. And so when we look at it and we looked at the data, they found that there weren't all these happy marriages when people stayed. What they found was actually a lot of unhappy marriages where people had to endure to stay. Am I in the right? I know y'all saying it's too early in the morning to keep it real. All right. All right. And so what's happening now is now that the economics are different. And if you look at the studies, now women out earn men for the first time on average. Right. All right. And so what's happening is that women are no longer feeling compelled to stay in marriages that don't serve them anymore. And I don't mean serve like a deity, but I mean serve their mental health, their well-being. Because here's what's happening with primary care physicians. What they're asking is they're saying, is there something going on? Right. Why is your blood pressure up? Why are you stressed out? Why are you having gallbladder disease? What they're finding is that a toxic environment, whether it's work or home, can anyone guess how many years it takes off of your longevity?
5 to 10.
Give me another guess. 20. 15. 30. All right. Yes. Right. Some of y'all gonna be gone in a minute. Right. That was a bad joke. Bad joke. Bad joke. All right. All right. So 8 to 10 years.
Wow.
a toxic environment. It's just a toxic environment. If you've ever been stressed, you know it's the cortisol that dumps into our bodies. So it's being, imagine, someone said 20, imagine if you have both. Stress at work, stress at home, and then stress with your kids, right? And then taking care of aging parents. So if we add all those things on top, can you see how this is straining our relationships if you don't know how to make those relationships work? All right, so today we're going to talk about three things that make people want to be married. All right. So when they dove into it, they found that there's a lot of people who are married, but then there's a subset of those who actually want to be married. So if you're trying to change your own marriage or relationship, all right, or if you're trying to change and counsel others and you only had to pick three things, these are the three things that you absolutely must do. But here's what's interesting, all right? Here's what's interesting is what they found was health problems. And I'm just going to be real with you. How many of you all are in servant capacities? You serve, you help, you heal. How many? All right? It doesn't have to be official. It could be in your family, all right? I've been doing this for almost 3 decades, and I talk to healers almost every single day. All right. And like we talked about in the initial session is that they believe that it is their right, their duty, and say, hey, we're going to endure this. I'm not going to get divorced. I'm going to do this. I'm going to honor my commitment to God. But what's happening is that they're dying inside. All right. And so they're having this conflict, you know, and saying I should live and not die. Right. But then I'm committed to this relationship. Remember I said earlier, you have to restore to the level of burnout. But what was the second thing? You can't go back to the same thing that's burning you out. That's right. All right. And so what they found is that marriages no longer can be a piece of paper. They actually have to have these three ingredients to work. So I started thinking about Nehemiah. All right. I started thinking about, well, just some statistics really quickly. When they say there's a 50% divorce rate, that's actually not true. It's actually 65% for first marriages and 35% for second marriages. All right? So this is interesting that when you are counseling couples, know that someone's on their second or third marriage, they're going to need more help because you're dealing with a lot of different things that happened before, a lot of different trauma. But they did something that was interesting. They found within the church there was a population that had a 10% divorce rate. 10%. 10%. And what they found was being a believer is not enough to protect you from divorce. How many of y'all agree with that? Amen. All right, amen. But actually doing the things that make you a believer does protect you. For instance, when they interviewed couples, they found couples who did Bible study together, couples who exercised together, couple who prayed together, couples who went to church together, couples who fasted together. So when you did a deep dive and you went within, you extracted what was in those couples, they found that couples that actually did more things to bring them closer to God actually had better marriages because they were doing things. And that was eye-opening to me. Or I immediately say, hey, I told my wife, we need to do a Bible study, baby. All right? Because, you know, as a minister, you, she's here, I'm there, we're moving, we're doing it. But how much time are we actually spending doing the things that we're preaching and we're teaching to one another so that we can stay connected with 3 kids, with aging parents, with planning a family reunion, with trying to teach a third grader how to do math, but they don't do it the same way? I got the answer right. But she still got it wrong because the teacher said you taught her wrong. I said, I can't win for losing. Really? Send me a YouTube video on how to do this. I simply thought you just multiply. I didn't know all these boxes. I don't understand what all these, it just seems like it's harder the way you, but anyway, that's not for me to judge. All right? So that's something to remember. How often are you doing things that bring you closer? It's not that necessarily a reconciliation is needed amongst the couple. It's a reconciliation to God. If we can get the couple closer to God, not in noun, but in verb, a lot of things will go away because they are connected, right? So, let's see. It got me to thinking about Nehemiah. And if we're going to be leaders in our communities, and if we're going to be leaders in our marriages, and if you're like me, you know this because you all are in church, right? Anyone ever been over marriage ministry? Everyone? Raise your hand. Come on, raise your hands high. Oh, look at all the perfect marriages. Keep your hand up. Keep your hand up, right? If you're over marriage ministry, your marriage has to be perfect, right? My wife and I, marriage ministry, we're hosting a marriage retreat. I did not say we had a perfect marriage. We're doing the best we can. The pressure, right? And so it got me thinking about leadership, but you're called. And I said, hey, if we're going to lead this ministry, whether it's fair or not, we are a symbol. No one's coming to the marriage retreat if we are separated. It is not. It has nothing to do. Our marriage has nothing to do with your marriage, right? But y'all know the symbols, the symbolism, right? They don't even like each other. I'm not going, right? Our cousins won't even go to the marriage retreat. They know we're beefing. You can't even talk to your cousins. The registrations would drop, right? Just please. All right, so it's the pressure. It's the pressure of everyone looking at you. And sometimes in your family, everyone's depending on you because you're the last beacon of hope for marriage. You're the last beacon of hope because the younger generation no longer wants to be married. They're looking at TV. They're looking at social media. And they're also looking at what's happening in our homes, and they're making a decision. If this is marriage, I don't want it. Isn't that sad? Yeah. So that means that we have to change what we're modeling to make sure we don't lose this generation. But back to Nehemiah, and then we're going to get right into this, because I want this to be interactive. As I was thinking about Nehemiah as a leader, Nehemiah had to build the wall while under attack. Can anyone relate? It says, when the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time they had not set the doors and the gates, all right? And Sanballat and Geshem sent me a message, come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me, so I sent messengers to them with this reply, I am carrying a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it to go down to you? This spoke to me because a lot of times when we're trying to build up the church, we're trying to build up work, we're trying to build up our marriage, there's a simultaneous attack that is happening. All right? There's an attack on marriages. How do we build up the church when it causes us to spend so much time away from our families? We find ourselves having to build while defend at the same time. Come on now. Anyone felt like they're having to build and defend on the home front at the same time? Sometimes you have to defend at home, but don't raise your hand. Just wink at me if you're a couple. Just wink at me. Raise your hand. Don't touch your spouse, all right? Don't do anything, all right? And so it's like, how do you do this? How do you build and defend? Because Nehemiah had to do this. He was a politician as well. Tell him I'm building the wall, I can't come down. Because all he wanted to do was come down to stop him from building the wall and scheme against him. So in one hand, he had a building tool. On the other, he had a weapon of defense. He was on guard. All right? So this is how, because this is an assignment, because I know I'm here on assignment, you all are going to be called to give marriage advice. Raise your hand if you, ladies, I know, how many of you all have been, your friends are calling, they want marriage advice. They want relationship advice. So, gentlemen, the same thing, all right? And so how do you give this advice, which is so necessary, and still be able to make it work at home? Let's dive into it. I'm so excited. All right, so when they looked at the study, there's a psychologist by the name of Dr. Carol Rustbelt, and she says, I want to study couples who actually want to be married, all right? Not those who are married, but want to get married, and I want to see if I can find anything in their characteristics that we can apply to marriages to get them to change. And the first thing they found was satisfaction level of each spouse. Second thing was investment size in a relationship. And the third one was cold, and I'm gonna break it down. It's called the quality of alternatives. All right, I'm gonna break that down. It's so obvious, and it's so in your face, but it's gonna make sense. So the first question is, what's your satisfaction level? So when you're sitting down with couples, ask them on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you in this marriage? It's not enough to be married. We have to be what? Happily married. God doesn't want us to be married. He wants us to be happily married, right? Not the ball and chain, like, oh, I'm thugging it out. I'm just trying to make it through 5 more years, right? Just trying to make it. I'm looking at the life insurance policy. If I can just make it, I can just make it that long, I'll be all right. He doesn't want us to suffer through it. And so one of the things, this is new information, because I don't think grandma and grandpa thought about satisfaction level of the spouse. Right? And so what it's saying is that we need to make sure that our spouses are satisfied. So that means that we can no longer have marriages where one person's happy and the other person's unhappy. All right? And almost without fail, this is what happens just over 26 years, and it bears out in the research. Men typically tend to be off in how well the marriage is going. All right? And so I have my say, hey, write down a number of how happy you are in the marriage. And by happy, I mean, how happy are you in the marriage and with the marriage? All right, because you can have joy and still be, joy comes in the morning. I'm like, we're not talking about that right now. How happy are you in the marriage and with the marriage? I know joy gonna come in the morning, but that's not what we're talking about right now. All right, talking about happiness. All right, and typically what happens is the wife will write down the number, husband will write down the number, and they'll turn the number into me, and I'll look at it, and typically it'll go something like this. They'll say, all right, wife, what's the number? All right. And she'll say, husband, what's the number? And the husband will say, we're not doing well. All right. But it's not that bad. I've seen worse. All right. We're on duct tape. We're on duct tape and glue. We're making it work. But we didn't done this for a long time. I'm going to give it about a strong 6. We're 6.5. It's not perfect. It's not perfect, but it's not that bad. Right. And then I look at the wife, and the wife is a 2. And he's like, what? He's like, what? Mary? We just made love yesterday. He's like, it might have been for the last time, brother. It's going to be a long season. Winter's coming. Winter's coming. One more time, right? And so there's this divide. There's this divide almost always with couples. And here's why. Is that there's this idea that it is against your marriage to nag or complain as a wife. All right. But what they found is that the wife is typically the one who's looking out for the quality of the marriage, and the things that she's asking for are the things that the marriage actually needs. All right. And so the husband hears it. Right. And he's thinking, well, maybe I should change or you know, maybe it's just a season. I'm just going to ride this out. Maybe this is just a mood. This will go away. You just come on, man. Wink. I know I'm getting in trouble. I'll say it so you don't have to. Just ride it out. Just ride out the storm and do the best I can, all right? And then you'll still host the holidays, you'll still do birthdays, you'll still make love, but the wife's still at a 2. It's amazing, right? She's still at a 2. This is my obligation. We're supposed to make love. We're supposed to host family reunion. And so when they come into marriage, the men are thoroughly confused. I'm trying to figure out. Because you should be on the other side of the bedroom. We made love last night. Why are we here, right? All right? And so what we need to do is be aligned and be on the same page, all right? And what they're saying is that we do need wives to actually speak up and give their numbers so that men know what the real score of the marriage, all right? And what we're finding is that people are coming in so late, they're really coming in to help explain this to the kids. They're really coming in to reconcile divorce, even though they are faith. They're really coming in because they're trying to have a collaborative divorce because they're coming in too late. Because years upon years upon years have eroded the faith. All right? And so the first thing is we have to ask couples how satisfied. And what does that look like? That means you're saying, I feel satisfied with our relationship. My relationship is better than other relationships. My relationship is close to ideal. So what does this mean? That means, I'm going to use the F word. Your spouse has to be your friend. I'm not getting kicked out, y'all. Your wife, your husband has to be your friend. The currency of marriage is actually feelings. It's feelings, When I've sat with couples and they go their separate ways, there is always a common. We don't feel each other anymore. Mm-hmm. They'll say, I like him or her, but I'm no longer in love. We don't need to play this out. We don't need to have anything contentious. We don't need to have any conflict. We just need to be able to bring closure because we're still going to have to co-parent and figure out what to tell our kids and which two churches we're going to have to go to, because I don't want people asking, where's Paul? Where's Stacy? I'm just being honest. You see how this breaks the house? All right, because they're trying to get over it. And they're like, where's so-and-so? I saw so-and-so sitting next to so-and-so. That's not right. And so we have to reconcile that. So you have to be friends. So what are the things that you do to build friendship with your spouse? What'd you say?
Communication.
What else?
Spending time together.
Come on now. Touch. Things you're supposed to enjoy. That you both enjoy. All right? Not just watching the game and she's falling asleep. All right? My wife and I have a deal. We have a deal. All right? And I call my wife Inglewood because it's funny to me. All right? And so I call my wife Inglewood. And I knew she was up to something because she does not like sports. She was like, I'm going to watch the Falcons game with you. I said, what? Baby, that's nice. She was asking questions. I said, this is weird. God, you are a prayer answerer, right? Man, and she was cooking for me, too. I was like, this is great, right? And then the game went off, right? And she said, I need to borrow your truck. I said, okay, cool. She said, just come with me. I said, okay. All right. And so we pull up to the antique furniture shop. I was looking at, oh, I mean, it wasn't just a store. It was like an expo. I'm going to die. This is too much. All right. And I'm there. But I was like, okay. All right, if I time this right, I can get back to the second half of the game. I tried to pull a fast one on Inglewood. I did. I just said I liked everything she saw. I like it, buy it. I like it, let's buy it, right? It was, some of it was too much, but I was like, man, time is money. Like, let's just buy it, right? She was like, no. I watched that whole game, all right? You're going to stay here at least 3 hours. Oh, I was like, oh, Inglewood, I would have told you not to watch the game with me. I'm fine by myself. No, all right? But what I realized was I had to be her friend. Don't get me wrong, my wife is fine. How many other brothers would be glad to go antique furniture shopping with her? At least fake it, all right? A lot of them. But we forget that in marriage is that the whole goal is to do friendship building things together. And so when we look at it, we actually have to do something called rituals of connection. All right? We have to actually give couples rituals of connection where you actually sit down and have couples write out rituals of connection. These rituals of connection happen in the church. Are there not rituals to keep us connected? Yes. All right? There's congregating, right? Then there's Bible study. Then there's devotion. Then there's meeting. Then there's meeting. Right? Y'all know what I'm talking about. All right. And so in corporations, they have board meetings, they have Monday meetings, they have Thursday meetings. But when we look at our marriages, we don't have any meetings. We don't have time where we exist and nothing else exists. We don't have time. We're spending our time with the kids, or we're spending our time with our phones. We're spending our time with the church. Sometimes you spend more time planning the family reunion. Come on now. Am I in the right place? Right? I was over the PTA for our youngest daughter, and my wife was the only one that didn't know what was going on with the PTA. All right? I don't have time to talk to you. I'm talking to the parents. She's like, I am a parent. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Come on. Hey, parents, wear me out with these questions. I thought I'd just sign up to do my due diligence, right? But about 47 questions later, I am not the principal. I do not know the answer to these questions. All right? But I wanted to do the right thing. But I had to remember that my wife was a parent, too. Anyway, I'll confess to you. See, I don't have to. I'll do it so you don't have to. All right? So satisfaction level. Are we clear on that? So rituals of connection. So what do they look like really quickly? Does anyone have a morning ritual? Does anyone have a morning ritual? Yes. Devotion. Someone else? You said shower. Together. Y'all married, showered together. All right. Over here, you were saying something. Exercise. Exercising in the morning, yes. Talk in the morning. Come on now. I was talking to an older couple, and they're retired. They take a bath. They have bath and breakfast in the morning. I said, I like that. That's the last time I did that, though. I ended up with a two-year-old, so I got, you know. Working at home was great until I was like, wait a minute. Girl, you all right? You walk a little slow? You know what's going on? They're retired, right, right. They're retired, right. And so rituals of connection. So rituals of connection look like morning prayer, going for a walk, checking in, simply eating a meal together. Do you eat dinner together? Do you have 15 minutes a day where it's just your marriage exists to where you just, it's called love mapping. I'm mapping away into your head and heart every single day. See, we can't just do it, you know. You got married back in, you know, 2007, and you go ask your wife what's the favorite color. She's like, that ain't been my favorite color for 10 years. Right? Like, oh, I didn't know that. Right? Like the Falcons not even my favorite team. After they lost to the Patriots, I had to disassociate so I didn't have a heart attack. So now my favorite team, whoever's winning, right? I deserve to win all the time because they hurt me so badly. Right? Right? So even to this day, I was watching the game last night. I was unemotional. I was burnout for the Falcons. All they're going to do is, you're going to have hope and they're going to lose 28-3. And all you had to do is run the ball. But anyway, it's not a therapy session. All you had to do is run the ball. Run the ball. They said, the announcer said, it's mathematically impossible for anyone to lose this game if they simply run the ball. Throw to Julio. But anyway, that's a whole new conversation. All right. Other rituals of connection. Pillow talk. Oh, you said it. All right. How many of you know you need a ritual for lovemaking? All right. A ritual. All right. Because sometimes we can be so busy, we're not on the same page. So an older couple came in and said, oh, we solved that, doc. All right. Because how many of you know that one of the things that stresses a marriage, especially for men, is rejection. All right. Being rejected. All right, and I'm so glad I'm married so that I can get it. If I weren't married, I'd be thinking like, wow, rejection, where's that going to happen? Right, look at you, look at me, we love each other, it's going to happen, right? And then, you know, I eat some beans, I'm like, oh, not tonight, baby, this ain't nothing. right? She's watching, oh, baby, this is Netflix, oh, let me see this final episode. I have to go to work, and I have to get through 30 more minutes. I'm like, baby, come, it's me. Like, the 30 more minutes, you're going to be here. I need to see the end of this. I need to see how this is going to end. All right? So I'm so glad I get it. Or, you know, you have kids, and the kids are always around. Right? I tell them, this is probably too much, but I told them, I said, I can't make love to you the way I want to with the kids are there, because you don't listen. You don't listen, so I have to always be on guard. Are those feet? Because you won't hear anything. I can't focus. I can't do what I need to do if I'm always listening, because you don't focus and concentrate. I'm not going to defax for anybody. I'm not, no. So we have to have rituals. And so what the couple did was that they bought these pillows. On one side, one said tonight, and the other side said not tonight. All right? So when both pillows say tonight, they knew to initiate. All right? Just being honest. All right? All right. So when we start talking about it, how much time are you spending, right? Spending quality time, love mapping, expressing gratitude and appreciation. All right, so when you first start dating, you say, oh, baby, you're so fine, or you're so wise, so strong. I'm so glad I have a man that can lead me. What would I ever do without you, right? And then you get into the marriage, and you stop appreciating one another. We stop verbalizing it, right? We stop expressing gratitude. We stop coming into the courts with thanksgiving. We don't take the scriptures. We don't have a word fitly spoken. It's like treasures, right? We stop doing that gratitude. We stop doing that. But guess what we are vocal about? Complaining. All right, so we're vocal with our complaints and we're silent with our appreciations, which makes marriages look and feel worse than it really is. All right. So one of the things we have to remind couples is to be appreciative. And do you know who's the most sensitive to appreciation of the genders? It is men. All right. I try to fish for some appreciation from my wife. All right. I try to fish for it. You know what we do. Right. So, you know, I gathered up the trash, right? And I was getting it, and I was walking out the door. I said, I'm about to take trash out. She didn't say anything. I said, I'm going to go ahead and take this trash out real quick. You want to put anything in it? I'm fishing, y'all. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry, right? So I go out there, and it's raining, and I put the trash in the trash can. I come out there. I said, woo, boy, it was raining out there. There was a lot going on out there, right? And she was like, what you want, a cookie? I was like, yeah, I do. I want appreciation, and I want a cookie. Yes, I do. I took the trash out. Yes, I want to say, baby, I don't know what I'd do. I don't know if I could take trash out. Trash would probably be all over the house, and you'd probably die if you weren't here. That's what I want to hear. All right. Thank you. I don't even know how to gas my car up because you gas it up. I don't know what I'd do without you. All right. Men want that appreciation, and we're hungry for it. All right. And so when we're verbal, and that goes both ways. All right. You can't just come home and ask, what's for dinner? Hey, how you doing? You look good. How was your day? How are you feeling? We're not doing those. So those have to actually be rituals. It's called a ritual of reunions, of getting away and reunions. How many of you have a ritual when you leave the house? Do you pray? Do you kiss? All right. I remember being upstairs and heard the alarm go, tit-tit-tit. I said, I know my wife's not gone. I called. I said, babe, you left without kissing me? She was like, I'm halfway down the street. I'm not turning around now. All right. We had to put a ritual that one of us would find the other before we left, because we got so caught up in the world. We forgot we're supposed to stay connected. And then when you come home, you're supposed to find your spouse and connect. So that's rituals of connection. Number two. All right. I know you can't read this, but it's called investment size. This is super interesting. Investment size.